Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rock That Relationship. We are here today to talk all about risk-taking. It's part of our whole series on self-growth, self-work, self-love, just kind of being a good champion for who you are and investing in yourself to be the best person you can be. So today we're talking about risk-taking, and it's our final episode of the season, so that's exciting, kind of bittersweet, because it's been a fun journey this season, talking about all these episodes, but also pretty cool to be able to wrap it up and get it out to everyone so you all can tune in. So what are your thoughts about this, Tracy, about the idea of talking about risk-taking as an idea of related to self-work and self-growth and self-love?
Well, I haven't really thought about it ever before. I mean, I guess my entire life is that way. Like, I don't mind taking risks generally in life, but I guess I'm kind of I probably need coaching on this myself, because that is a big problem that I have of not really taking risks, even though I look like I do from the outside. I was actually talking to a friend yesterday about that, about my job and what I want to do, you know, with my own business. And I said, I just don't have the confidence. And she's like, I'm really surprised to hear that, you know. And that was something I've worked on with my therapist for a long time, which, you know, I'm sure both of us just gave up at some point about it. There's no point. Like, she said what she had to say, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because you talk about this idea of risk taking as, you know, something from the outside. People would look at you because you do take risks. You do take a lot of risks, but they're not like the risks that could be very well thought out and calculated. You're very hesitant on, and the risks that are really risky and kind of crazy and out there, you just jump on. So you have the capacity to do that. It's almost like if you overthink it or you talk yourself out of something, it, you know, if you give yourself that time, then you won't take that chance.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. It's like it's actually like the less risk. So it's not a risk to my life. It's not a risk to anything. If I try and start my own business and it doesn't work out or whatever, but that seems like more scary to me than like risking my physical life.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Right. Well, let's unpack some of that stuff around risk-taking. So, you know, when I think about risk-taking as a self-work, self-growth, you know, self-love thing, it's this idea about, again, investing in ourselves. And sometimes we have to take risks in order to do that. So I think about the person who really wants to do a different career, you know, than the one that they're in, and they don't want to take that risk, but they're not investing in themselves. So how do you take that risk? And of course, you can do things to mitigate, like the residual effects of a risk, right? You can have a plan B, or you can, like, if you overlap careers, there's things that you can do to make that risk less risky. But still, there are people who just stand still. And we've talked about this in our Unstuck season a lot.
Right.
But really thinking about it in terms of not just getting unstuck, but this idea of, is it an investment in yourself to take some good risks in your life, right? Take some chances.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's start with this question and let's both answer it. This is my coaching question of the day.
Okay.
And I got this off of trusty internet, so of course it's a good question. Think about a moment in which you felt brave. What was it, and what did you do to feel brave? Like something that you did that was confident, or you felt like courageous, like you did something that you didn't think that you could do, but you did. And you look back on that. Do you have a moment? I mean, you probably have several, but think of one particular one.
I mean, I guess that would involve heights, doing something with heights, like risky hiking.
Okay. So something physical?
Yeah, because I used to be scared of like being blown off a mountain. So I'd get all freaked out at high altitude, like with exposure, you know, where you could fall. And I would act like I'd get all wigged out that it was going to be blown off. But those are like my bigger risks. You know, it's weird. Like if I look back at my life, like, I just straight up quit, like, and people try to stop me, you know, from quitting good jobs. And I'm just like, yeah, whatever.
Yes, that's true.
But then like, oh, I think the wind is going to blow me off a mountain and I freak out. Like that's right. You know what I mean, you're
more at risk to die and not than quitting a job, but still, yeah. I mean, I guess the grand scheme of the chance you're taking, you're likely
like more people are more stable, right? Like when I meet people who are like, oh, I've been in this career for 15 years, I've been in this. I'm like, that is so foreign to me.
Yeah, but then you'll be scared to go up a mountain that's on a windy day.
But I go. I mean, you asked about brave, so right. No, I go. But then I act weird up there.
Okay, but
I don't anymore. Yeah, like I got over that. But I'm afraid of flying, you know. So, but I fly, like I do fly because that's the only place to get places.
Right.
I don't really feel like, you know, and that's the thing. It's like it's never like a matter of oh. Am I not being brave? Like what's holding me back career wise or doing my own business wise? I don't know if it's a matter of like bravery. So when I think of bravery, I just think of, you know, physical stuff.
Okay. Well, I mean, I have two examples, but one of mine is not physical, but my one that's physical is going rappelling. Oh my gosh, I thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Right.
And then I got to the bottom and I screamed like, woohoo. And it was mostly because I survived, not because I thought it was like an exhilarating activity. And I felt brave and I was glad that I did it. And it was funny because I have since rappelled a few times on a couple different rappelling trips. I've been on three additional rappelling trips. And this morning, just right before I got here, I booked another rappelling trip for the summer. So a really big
one. Do you feel fear about doing it now?
No, I'm like super excited because I'm like, feel comfortable.
It's fun.
Right. I did it. I achieved it. It wasn't as scary as I thought. And the more I did it, the less scary it felt. And so it was a risk at first, but now it doesn't feel as risky. And the interesting thing is the first rappels I did were like 30 feet. And today I just found out that the rappel we're doing is 80 feet. And I'm like, cool. That's awesome.
Right. Right. See? And I mean, it really doesn't matter. I mean, the thing about stuff like that is like, are you trusting who you're with and are you actually looking at everything yourself? Is there enough rope? Is it tied to something right. That's secure, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of that too is that I'm going with the same people and the same guide and one of my friends who I've gone pretty much every time with. So that does feel good. But I will tell you the one that I want to focus on is an emotional risk that was really kind of scary for me and I felt really brave is, you know, I got selected to do a TED Talk back in 2017 and it seemed great on paper, right? Like as a speaker, you know, this was great. I'm a teacher. I get up in front of people. This is awesome. But as it got closer and closer, they kept telling us like, remember, this is in perpetuity, which is basically another way of saying this will be on TED.com for the rest of your life. So don't screw it up. And I was freaking out. I was terrified. But then I just summoned the courage. I just got excited. I used my adrenaline. I bounced up and down before I went on stage and I nailed it. And I was brave. I went out there. I mean, there was a little part of me that thought, I don't have to go and do this. You don't, Corey, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And then I was like, but wait a minute, I want to do this, but I'm scared. Right. That was the difference I had to figure out whether it was I didn't want to do it or I wanted to do it, but I was scared and I was scared. So I tried to figure out a way to get unscared and I just pushed through it. And then when I went out there, I had a great time. So much so that funny yesterday, I actually was looking around to see if there's other TED programs. I want to try and do another TED talk again. So
nice.
Inquiring about that. So it was interesting. And both in those instances, it was almost like the initial fear of the risk was way scarier than the actual activity or event itself. Like it still was scary. Rappelling was scary and going out on the TED stage was scary, but it wasn't as scary as I thought. And both of them turned out well. And granted, if they didn't turn out well, then it would have been a bad risk, right? Like you would say the bad outcome, but they turned out well. And now I want to go do both of them again.
Right. Good.
Yeah.
I mean, interesting. I mean, everybody says, even if they screw something up or it doesn't go well, that, you know, they learn something, I guess. Well, I guess everybody doesn't say that, but I guess people who talk about stuff that didn't go well. And then the other people where it didn't go well, they just live in embarrassment for the rest of their life.
Right. Well, I mean, the other thing too, is you think though, risk is something where if you take one risk and it doesn't go well, you might take a different risk later on that you would never have taken if you didn't take that first risk. So like my brother started a business in 2008, right when the recession was happening, and it was a big risk, financial risk and career risk. And of course it ended up going under, as did a lot of businesses then. But instead of saying like that was a bad risk, he started another business. He works for himself now, and he's been doing it for many years, and he's incredibly successful. But what he learned from that first risk-taking experience, he was able to take with him into this next one. So who knows if he would have ever started the second business had he not tried the first one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like in some ways that it's, I wouldn't say failure, because a lot of it wasn't his fault. It was just the
economy, right.
But just the setback or the unsuccess of it led
right,
him
could
to
really mess somebody up in the head.
Yeah. And then you might say, I'm never going to take that risk again. Right.
Right. Like, right.
If I would have twisted my ankle on the way down from my first rappel, I might have said, I'm never going to rappel again. And thankfully I didn't, but sometimes you have to work through that. Right.
Yeah. And I doubt twisting your ankle would have been the real problem. I think more so falling off a rope.
Right. Exactly. Like it depends on the extent of the outcome or
right.
the effects of what that risk is.
Right.
So have you
twisting ankles isn't really the biggest risk in rappelling. It's dying.
No, it isn't. But it would have been one of those things like, see, I told you so, I shouldn't have gone. Right. Like
would it a twisted ankle versus like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Would have a twisted ankle really have deterred you in the future?
Maybe.
If you free fell.
Well, if I free fell, I would probably have died and never done it again.
Well, but, not but at 30 feet. You would have just been hurt and scared.
But the point is that like if there's something smaller, an impact from the risk that's something smaller, if it was something like twisting my ankle, would that have deterred me enough from never rappelling again? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, would it have taken me falling 30 feet to never rappel again? Well, I can tell you that would have made it so I would never rappel again.
Right.
But maybe something smaller, like a smaller setback. Would that, like my brother's setback was that his business closed, but he didn't lose like his life savings and he didn't lose,
right.
you know. So like had he lost all that, maybe he wouldn't have started another
right.
business, but the repercussions weren't as bad as they could have been. So
right.
do the repercussions of a risk gone bad, the level of those impact whether you take the risk again.
I'm sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of this, have you ever taken a risk, whether it's a physical risk, emotional risk, a professional risk, whatever, and it hasn't paid off, like it did go south?
Yeah, that's pretty much a lot of my life.
Do you have a particular example, a life?
I mean,
example?
That's like a life. That's like my entire life. I mean, I'd say that, right? Probably leaving the police department when I did wasn't wise. And now that I'm looking at it from a 55-year-old's perspective, but then as my friend always says, well, you don't know what would have happened if you stayed. Maybe there was a reason you felt compelled to leave, you know, who can know? But at 55, I'm like, well, I sure would like that money now, you know?
Right, right.
I'd like that bigger pension. So that didn't really pan out for me. And then I really didn't want to be a lawyer. I'd rather have been a doctor, but you know, I didn't want to do a lot of those things when I was in my 20s of, you know, I was big into animal rights. And so I didn't want to have to dissect anything or cut up, you know, living creatures and all that. So I steered away from that. And then I did my, you know, foreign like languages and all that. And then for some reason I didn't travel abroad. And every time I've graduated from a program, there's been a massive like economic problem, like savings and loan crisis, whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I feel like my whole life has just kind of like been cobbled together. And if I were to like redo it, I would do it so differently. So, yeah, I'd say my whole life. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. Yeah. And it's hard because you don't know what the factors are, like when you're talking about the economic factors or you know, the coulda, shoulda, wouldas, right? Like you left the police department because you're taking a risk to do something else. But then you look back and whatever that something else was didn't pan out the way that you wanted. It wasn't as fulfilling or the money or the longevity or the
right.
pension or whatever. You know, so sometimes it's like regret, right? Like the risk seems like it's a better move. And then once we get there, we realize it might not be later.
Yeah. And I think like all you can do is, I mean, also I wanted to go back for a long, long time and multiple different times. I wanted to go back and I didn't. But then I look at friends, you know, who are doctors now that I went to high school with. And I mean, I could have just done the same thing, you know, mm-hmm. but I just didn't have that structure growing up or any kind of assistance with like, okay, how do you plan out? How do you, you know, go forward? So I'm trying to do things differently now,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I believe mm-hmm. that I will have 55 more years of life. So I'm going to do everything differently.
Okay. You know? Okay. And that's a risk in and of itself, is leaving something that you're familiar with, which is the way your life has been going for the first 55 years, and doing something totally different.
I'm not leaving it. I mean, I got lucky to be where I am. I'm a very fortunate person, but it's all been haphazard, you know, but yeah. maybe that's how my life was supposed to go. I don't know. I mean, I ended up being extremely happy. So I guess it's not that bad, but if it wouldn't be like a good playbook for anybody else to live this haphazard, like no security kind of lifestyle. But I just trust, I mean, really, I do trust that I'll just end up where I'm supposed to be. And if that's to have an experience that I can then talk about later, so be it. You know, like, I don't know. I'm trying to be more planning and trying to plan more ahead and try to be more like aware, and also think now, like literally I'm thinking, okay, I'm like a 20-year-old. I need to actually start thinking about retirement, investing money and all that. I mean, I'm 55. I never have done that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm with someone, you know, 15 years younger than me. So it's like, okay, well, we both do this together because we both have had these haphazard paths to where we are now. And so together we can do that. So if we live to be 90 and 105, then great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It won't matter that, oh, we're starting this at 55 and 40, you know?
Right. Well, and even for those people who don't have as long of a lifespan as you're expecting to have, if say they only had 20 more years left, it's not too late to do what you want to do.
If I die in that 20, if at the end of that 20, it won't really matter. I won't need retirement money, will I? You know what I mean?
Right, right. Because yeah, you're looking at retiring much later than I am. So.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at retiring at 90.
Yeah.
So that I can enjoy the last 15 years of my life as a free person. I mean, but that's the other thing is like, if you look at my life compared to other people's lives, like friends that stayed on the police department and whatever, like I don't have the health problems they have. I don't have the body things, you know, the damage to my body that they have. I don't have the like anger issues and mental problems they have. And so, you know, in some ways I'm really lucky, and I've taken off a lot of time basically in semi-retirement to enjoy the life that I do have. I mean, I'm off for 2 months now, you know, and I made good money this year. So I'm like, oh, well, I'll just take 2 months off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a risk.
I mean, that could be a way, right. Yeah. And it also could be a way of living that actually gives me longevity because mm-hmm. I do take breaks along the way. I mean, and I guess there's no like prescribed way to do that. Like, what does even retirement mean to me? I don't know, because I haven't worked half of my adult life.
Okay.
You know? Well,
yeah. So you've had a lot of risks that you say might not have paid off, and some of them might pay off. You don't even know. You're still sort of in the middle of your life, so you don't even know. But I'm going to approach this question much more tactically, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've taken a lot of really good risks. I've taken a lot of risks that had a high chance of not paying, you know, paying out or paying off. Particularly financial risks. I've pushed myself to the brink on some things where I've like bought a house before I had the money to pay for it. I just was, you know, like there are things I've been doing where I've been like, I live on the edge a little bit with some of that, but it's all worked out for me. And same with professional,
right.
I push things to the brink and I say yes to a lot of things and I take lots and lots of risks professionally, and they almost always pay off. And if they don't, the setback is so minor, I can't even recall them. But
right.
where the risks for me that haven't, some of them that haven't paid off are, you know, like like you and I have talked about ad nauseum in this entire podcast every season, is that I tend to get into relationships and friendships and work situations, collaborations in which I stay too long when things have gotten to be at a point where I'm not happy or it's not productive or it's not healthy. And the risk I take is staying, hoping that it'll get better. And in very few cases, it has in any of those professional or personal situations. So I take the risk by saying, I'm going to give this person the benefit of the doubt, I'm going to stick around, and I risk it. I risk in my professional world, I risk my professional reputation, I risk, you know, opportunities that I might miss because someone else did something that, you know, wasn't in alignment with what I wanted. So there's a lot of things where I might have a bad setback. And so I say a long time, and it's not bad to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I think I give way too much of that. So I'm trying to learn to say, no, 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 no. And like when I enter into something and I already see like a red flag, nope, I walk. And it might be a red flag that isn't really like that red of a flag. It could be, you know, an orange flag. But at the same time, it's like, nope, 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 nope. These risks have never really paid off for me. I mean, I don't know if I can even recall one situation in which I stayed in some type of interpersonal connection or relationship or situation too long, giving the benefit of the doubt to someone where it actually turned out.
Right.
I can't even recall one example of that, but I can probably name 30 or 40 that haven't. So,
but it's interesting because I don't think you would leave anyway in for the vast majority of those.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean? Well, like you say, okay, it didn't work out or I stayed too long or whatever, but I have tried to talk to you about that before, like when you're in it, and I'm not saying that you haven't tried to talk to me about similar stuff, but you're not going to leave. You're not going to leave anyway.
But I have. You've watched me do it.
Well, no, but way, way later than you should have.
Way later than I should have.
So did it really prejudice your life that much? You know what I mean? Did it really hold you back? Like you're doing pretty well.
I mean, I'm doing well, but yeah, it was harmful to my emotional well-being in every one of those cases. It's been harmful to my emotional well-being, and I have eventually left and set boundaries as we've talked about, and they're still later than I probably should have, but they're earlier than I would have. Does that make sense? So I'm making progress by moving up that kind of timeline, to leave and to cut that off. So yeah, it has caused a lot of emotional harm to me. You know, you've been processing with it, you know,
I also feel like some of that is really helpful, even though, you know what I mean? Is it as harmful as it is helpful? And within that process, it helps you to move to a better place. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's making lemonade out of lemons. Yes. I would prefer to not have like the toxicity to begin with. Like when something starts to go south, I need to just take a step away.
And it's hard though.
I mean, so.
Because if you don't put in the effort, then you're like, I didn't put in enough effort. You know what I mean? It's really hard to just say, oh, I'm going to walk away, because that's just not what's normally done. You know what I mean?
Right. And I don't think I would be like the first sign of an argument like later, but I just think I need to have a more balanced approach, because it is a risk also walking away. You walk away from somebody, it's a risk that you're losing that relationship forever.
Right.
And so you take a risk either way. You're staying as a risk, leaving as a risk. So what do you do?
Right.
So for me, I haven't been able to find kind of the happy medium of what that looks like. And there really is another space there, which is, you know, right now I'm positioning it as kind of polar opposites, like either stay full-fledged in a relationship or a friendship or a work connection, and it's harmful and you just hope it gets better, or you work to get it better, or you leave. But really the middle ground is you can also take distance from someone and recalibrate what your relationship looks like. Could I have a work relationship with someone that doesn't involve me investing all my professional reputation in our projects, but maybe we do one project every couple of years that's kind of a low hanging fruit project where we can still work together, but it's not high stakes.
Right.
So there's like a middle ground that I need to explore a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's less risky, I think, because you're not walking away and you're not really staying. So that's the area that I would like to do and move away from having to put myself in these emotionally risky forced choice setting situations.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like I'm talking about it, like, you know, it happens in my romantic relationships. It happens in my friendships. It happens in my work relationships. And so for you, like when you think about it, are you more risky in some particular areas of your life, but you're not as risky in others?
I'm probably risky in all of them. And then, I mean, except for, well, no, probably just pretty much across the board. I mean, if other people were looking at my life, they would say, oh, you're taking a lot of risks. I mean, you know, I got married after 2 months in a relationship. This last time, people would probably consider that risky. I don't, but I'm sure from the outside, people would consider that. So I think it's also like, what level of risk is anybody comfortable with, you know?
Right.
And who's viewing it? Is it from the eye of the person doing it, or the, you know, is it being judged based on your average person, you know?
Right.
Would an average person do this? I don't know. But like, I don't want to be judged by the average person's standard either. So well, I guess that's why I just live the way I do.
That's a good question. Does it matter that other people think that getting married after 2 months is risky if you and your partner don't think that?
Right. Does it matter?
Is it a risk then, right? It's like if a tree falls in the woods and no one hears.
But I guess like doing divorce law also, it's like people would say, oh my God, that's a crazy thing to do. And then it's like, you're talking to someone, they've been married for 30 years, or these people who were together for 7 years and then got married. And then a year later they got divorced. Like the way I see it, like all of life is risk. You know, there's really not any way to mitigate risk, right? So I was happy in my job. And 3 weeks before I left that job, I thought everything was great. And I was like, oh, I could be here until, you know, I'm 65. And then bam, goodbye. So like, to me, it's more, life is like riding these waves. You know, you just got to get on it and try, like, stand up on your surfboard and do it. And then you get knocked down, or you ride it, and then you just get right back on and ride another one. Sometimes you get deluged over, sometimes you get knocked off, sometimes you ride in, it works out, and it goes great, you know. And then when it does, people go right back out and do it again. But they also go right back out and do it again after they got knocked off, because they like, oh, I'm gonna conquer this, or I'm gonna do better the next time.
Right, exactly. I feel
like, you know, that's kind of life for me. My perspective of life is it's kind of like one wave after another, and it's just a big thrill. And it's all a game of chance.
Yeah, it is.
Life is a game of chance, because you don't know when somebody else is going to have some issue with you and go and kill you at the beach or do whatever they're going to do. And like, you can't live your life like not living. You know, like life can suck and life can knock you down. But while you're still on this earth, you know, you might as well do the best you can and try and enjoy your life the most that you can.
Well, you know, I mean, when you talk about like this idea, like thinking about that in terms of risk, it's like there's a risk in, say, quitting your job and going into a totally different industry. But there's a risk in staying in your job that you hate, because then you risk being miserable and missing out on an opportunity to go do something that you really love. So pretty much depending on which angle you look at it, what you're doing is risky. Now, but the question is mostly like a risk of a lost opportunity is less painful or harmful sometimes than maybe an actual risk that goes south, right? Like if you quit your job to go get another job and then you don't get one and then you don't have enough money and you have to sell your house and all that, there's a lot of backlash or repercussions that come from that. But if you stay in a job that you don't really like, but you risk the emotional piece of not being connected to some job that you really like, yes, you risk that, but you're not necessarily having to sell your house. So it depends on the kind of losses you're willing to take, depending on the risk that you're willing to engage in, right? Some people are more financially like risky. Like for me, I would quit my job, and I haven't needed to because I love what I do, but I would quit my job and, you know, I've done a lot of financially risky things because I don't want to miss an opportunity, and they're risky. So I do that rather than stay in the status quo, because to me that risk is not the payoff isn't as big for me if I just stay. So you have to also think about that when you're sitting and looking at your risk portfolio, or your, you know, you say, what am I losing if I make this decision, and not necessarily just what am I gaining? Because if the loss is not that bad, it's tempting to want to stay, even if it isn't the right choice for you.
Well, and you'll never know. I'm thinking of, like, you won't actually know what might have happened. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there was a book I read in high school. I was just trying to figure out what it was, but it was like the protagonist was given two different paths, you know? So part of the book went this way. And then they have those choose your own adventure ending kind of books. Like, if you choose this path, this is what ends up happening. If you choose this path, that's what ends up happening. And so you'll actually never really know, you know, the path right. not taken, the road not taken.
Right.
You don't know. You don't know what's at the end of that.
And you don't know that that would have been successful. I mean, I think about this, like, I have very few regrets in this world, but kind of a missed opportunity was I wanted to play college basketball, and I never did. And so I think about that was a risk I didn't take, was like going and trying out for a basketball team or going to a college where I could play at the level that they were playing at. And I thought I could have been a college basketball player, but I don't know that I could have been. I could have taken right. that risk and not made the basketball team. So right. that's the other thing, is we create these fantasies around these untapped risks. Like, you know, I could have run for office. I could have done, could you
right.
really like, right. yeah, that's a risk you can take, but you have to have other things in place in order for that to actually see itself through.
Right.
So, you could say, I shouldn't have left the police department. You might have been fired a year later. You might have been killed a year later. I mean, I don't want to be, right. Scary, but.
Well, it's more likely I would have been killed than I would have been fired, but yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you don't know what could have happened. You know, the risk was not, I'm going to be a police officer for the rest of my life.
Right.
Right?
No, the risk is that I get murdered.
Right. And so, you know, because you don't have any control over whether you're not going to do that for the rest of your life.
Right.
So you could control that one moment, whether you left or you stayed.
Right. Yeah.
And that was it. So, when we talk about what holds us back from taking risks, right? Like this idea, like some people think it's, riskier to move, right? Like move from their stationary position to do something different. And other people think it's better to just sit and stay. And, and so the question is, though, investing in yourself and going back to this idea of self-love is figuring out what's right for you and really looking at like a risk analysis of the things that the opportunities that you could have, right? And thinking about what holds you back. So let me give you a few things that hold people back from taking what we would consider maybe good risks that have a high chance of success and or high yield of positive results, okay? What holds people back from even those things where it's like, some people are like, this is a no brainer. Like, do that. Of course. You know, like the person who's like, I have a crush on so-and-so, but I don't want to ask them out. And then everybody's like, I know this person's going to say yes. And you're like, I'm still scared. So let's talk about it. There's five of them. So let me see which ones resonate with you. Okay.
Okay.
What holds you back? Fear of failure, loss of money, reputation, lack of confidence to execute, or you don't know what a good risk would be. So you actually doubt whether that's actually a good risk in general.
Hmm. Are you asking me about my personal life?
Yeah, your personal life. Fear of failure, loss of money, reputation, lack of confidence, or you don't know what a good risk would be.
Well, fear of failure, reputation, and lack of confidence are the ones that hold me back with my career and writing stuff that I want to write.
Okay.
And I worked on that in therapy, and I didn't get anywhere. Not because of the therapist wasn't good. It's about me.
Okay. Loss of money is not a thing, and you usually
don't care.
And you usually can tell what a good risk is.
Yeah.
Okay. Which one's more pervasive, you think? Fear of failure, reputation, or lack of confidence? And
all three equal. I think they're equally problematic for me. Like, and I think people would have those in relationships, you know?
Right.
Like loss of money. I mean, does that really matter to a lot of people?
I mean, if they quit like a really high paying job, I've seen this happen in my field where people give up their professor gigs. That's like secure paycheck. And then they turn around and they, want to be a consultant and it doesn't pay out. They're scared that they're not going to have a consistent paycheck. Or they don't.
Yeah, but they left. Did they leave their job first?
Well, a lot of them talk about it beforehand. I mean, I've talked with so many of them. They're like, I'm scared. I won't have benefits. I'm scared to lose. You can't go back once you get.
Well, that's what, yeah, it's hard to go back. That's what I found.
Yeah.
Leaving my very secure job. And right. I've never had a secure job since. I mean, You know what I mean? So that was my risk. Like, right. I took it. Yeah, I mean, I get that. Like, I don't, yeah, it's interesting. Interesting.
Okay. So you would say fear of failure, reputation. And
like, I feel like the loss of money is more like, okay, are you going to invest a lot of money into like a business, right? Like that would be more the fear of money.
Okay. For you,
you know,
like, for me, it's leaving my professor job to be a full-time speaker, knowing that I'm going to lose my health insurance. That's like the number one reason I won't take that risk.
I see. Well, but you also like your job.
Well, I do like my job, right? I do like my job.
What would be the point?
Yeah. And I fear, I don't have a fear of failure. I'm already successful as a speaker and I don't have any lack of confidence with that.
Yeah, right. You're not leaving your job because you love your job.
No, I love my job. I love my job. But if I didn't, you know, for instance, it would, the one thing that would really make me question it is the benefits. Do I work there until I get Medicare, right? So I have to kind of think of that.
I mean, yes, because I don't see that your job is at all like tax. I don't mean this in it. It's not taxing to you. It's not causing you to have a mental breakdown. It's not affecting your health, you know?
Yeah. And I love it. So I'm going to just keep doing it. But
right.
I really have thought about it because if I didn't have that job, I could do more speaking, which is far more lucrative. So, you know, I've thought about that, but.
Well, if it's far more lucrative, then the health insurance issue shouldn't be I don't think that's why you're doing it. That to me is like, you're making an excuse and you're putting it on health insurance. I mean, you could go and get any other job that would give you health insurance, you know, like, no, I don't believe that's true. I think you like your job and it's
I
not,
do. But there were,
what do they say? People don't change unless the pain of staying is worse than the other pain, but you like it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really fortunate. You're in a really fortunate situation because it does give you the time off that you want, allows you to travel, and it allows you to do the speaker stuff.
I know. I mean, it's really good, but there was a time in there, I've been there 11 years almost. And there was a time in there when it was really not good. And I was job searching and other people were as well. And it was tricky and we all thought we were going to lose our jobs. And so, and it was bad. And I remember saying, I can't just up and quit because I have my health insurance. So I held on and just kept holding on. But I do think there are people that maybe not like me where I like my job, but other people who maybe won't leave their job because they won't have health insurance or they won't have the retirement benefits or they won't have that stable salary. So fear, loss of money is a real fear for some people in taking risks. Or like investing in something like, should we buy a new house? You know,
right.
Like, is that a good risk? And, you know, I've considered that, you know, like, do I ever want to buy a different house than the one that I'm living in? And I'm just like, no, I don't even have a house payment. Why would I do that? Like, that would be a risk that would be financially foolish for me. I have a five-bedroom home. Like, why would I do
until
that?
A person is forced to, right, by until, circumstance or whatever. Right. Like, I mean, I have a 2018 Honda Fit. It's got scratches on it because I scratch it up against my wall. And it's like, should I go and, you know, get another car that's bigger or whatever? And I'm like, why? Is this paid off? What do I care? What do I care if right. anybody's like, look at her driving that little car? So
yeah, speaking of cars, I drive little, you know? Little dumpsters around, you know, until I got my new car this summer. So it was the same thing. It was much more of a risk, you know, for me to buy a brand new car until I was forced to. And the only reason I was forced to was because they didn't make that part anymore for my car and it wouldn't run without it. So I was stuck. And you're right. The pain of staying, keeping the car was worse than the pain of buying the new one.
Because it kept breaking down. So it put you into a really bad position, right? So like if mine starts to get to that point, which is what happened with my last one, then I just sell it. But like, you know, and then I never looked back. I was so glad to get rid of that car. And then the guy who bought it recently came over to do work at my house and I saw it and I was like, wow, he really trashed it, but he loves it, you know?
Yeah.
But I never once cared that I got rid of it. But it was easier with the dog, sort of, but not really. So I mean, I think like anything in life, you just have to you have to accept that life is a series of choices and you're going to make choices that are going to work out or not. And you're not going to know if they didn't. I mean, if you didn't take the one path, you're just never going to know what the outcome could have been. And you just have to live with that. I mean, I think that that's that's life.
Right. Well, do you have, you can't like, do that's everything. The thing is, do you have more regrets about the decisions you made or the decisions you didn't make, or, you know what I mean, the choices you didn't take kind of thing? And it's an interesting kind of question to ponder, because there's a lot of people who live with a lot of regrets of things that they didn't do versus things that they did do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was listening to a podcast this morning. It was really interesting. There was this thing about this idea about clarity, is that sometimes we make what feels like a very clear decision, and it feels like inspirationally appropriate. It feels like maybe the universe guided us to it. We have no qualms about it. We make the decision. And then like a day or two later, we feel uneasy about the decision. And then we realize what we want to do about it, right? Like you second guess it. And so the idea is that sometimes that risk-taking process is a two-step process. You might feel really good about a decision and move forward and then not feel good about it. It doesn't mean, in some cases, if you can undo it, then undo it, right? before it you know, fully executes, if you can. And sometimes you can't. Like if you go in and scream at your boss and, you know, then mm-hmm. you probably can't get your job back. But it was kind of interesting that it's like a two-part clarity. There's the clarity in making the decision, and then there's the clarity of sitting with the decision. And mm-hmm. if both of those clarities don't line up, you probably haven't made the right decision.
Hmm.
I thought that was kind of poignant. Because I had a situation this summer where that happened, where I was pretty clear about a decision that I made. And a couple days in, I was so unsettled with the decision, I was almost making myself sick. And I kept thinking, well, I don't understand. I followed my gut. I followed my intuition. And I did this thing. I made this choice. And now I'm feeling like that is just not the right choice. But I think what happened was that I needed to make that choice so I could sit with some uncomfortable feelings mm-hmm. for a few days. The intuition was guiding me to the process, not to that choice. It was guiding me to say, you have to go through this yucky stuff for a few days so that you can learn what you need to learn. And then once I had clarity of what I wanted to do that was a little different, then I was able to do that and made the choice and everything fell in line. But I needed to have that 3 days where I thought that was the right decision for a second, and then I knew it wasn't, because mm-hmm. that opened up a whole bunch of stuff. So it's like a two-part clarity when you're making decisions.
Yeah, and I also don't believe in that. You know, there's people who have this philosophy that, oh, well, you made a decision, you have to stick with it, you know? Like, so you made a decision, it's not working, or you don't like it, change it. Like, you don't have to live with something because you, and I've heard this expression recently that I don't like, you know, oh, pick and stick. Like, who cares?
Pick and
stick.
If
it's not working. Yeah, if it's not working.
No.
If it's not working, don't do it. You know, like things can be changed up.
Right. It might have worked at one point and then it doesn't. So change it up. Or maybe you made the decision and it just didn't work from the get-go, but you don't owe anybody anything when it comes to this kind of thing. Like if it's your decision, you know, you said, I mean, you don't want to let people down. Like you're like, I thought I wanted to pick you up at the airport, but now I don't want to. Like that's different.
But different.
We're talking about like life decisions that affect you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You may say after many years of us talking about you creating your own business, you may just say, hey, Corey, you know what? I really actually don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And I can't.
Would you be shocked?
No.
Because I'm not going to say that. I need a helper. Okay.
No, but like I can't say to you, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to say, but you always wanted to do this. You told me you wanted to do this. You even bought a website. I don't understand. Like it's your decision. If you don't feel like it's the right one for you and that's the risk that you want to take, then my job isn't to convince you to stick with the decision that you made just because you made it at one point.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
So let me ask you. So if you're weighing a decision, right, like a really important decision that's maybe got a high risk potential, what kinds of things do you consider? What do you think about? Or do you just make the decision, whatever comes to you? Or do you actually think it through? Do you do pros and cons, or do you... Well, how do you approach decision making?
Haphazardly. Again, I just kind of, I'm more to go with my feeling at the moment, intuition about it. I mean, I'm trying to do more, you know, I would make like a pros and cons list if I did anything. But mostly I'm just like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Do I want to? Do I not? Yeah.
And you just know. And you go.
Yeah. And I just go with it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you have a process. What's your process?
My process, I think I mentioned this on one of the episodes many moons ago, but one of the things that I like to do when I have to make a really tough decision, particularly if it's between two choices, is I flip a coin. And I've told you that. I flip a coin. And
I do that too.
Yeah, heads is one and tails is the other, but I don't pick whatever it lands on. So if heads is quit my job and tails is stay in my job, and it lands on heads and it's I'm supposed to quit my job, and I get super uncomfortable and feel like I'm about to faint or throw up, then I know that that's probably not the right decision for me. So what it does is it triggers my body into a somatic response so I can assess whether or not that's a good path to go down. And so I've done that. that's really helpful. I mean, I try to do pros and cons lists, but honestly, it's hard because it's like you can't say you've got one pro and 15 cons. That pro might be more poignant than the 15 cons. So I like to sort of think through it all, you know, like all the different options and all the different scenarios, because I like to be informed, and being informed for me is being in control. And I like that for myself. But other than that, I don't know if I use a pro and cons list to make the decision, but I use it to sort of sit with it and just sort of make meaning. But then I really do use in more of an intuitive. But let me just say, my best decisions I've ever made have been intuitive. It's sometimes when I go against that because I've done some rational decision-making thing that I get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I go down the wrong choice. And I've done that with jobs. I've done that with people. I've done that with certain, you know, financial investments and things. Like, I just wake up one day, I'm like, I know that I'm supposed to be doing this.
Right.
So I trust my instinct. And so for people out there, you know, you may say like, well, my instinct is having me do something really risky and I can't because I've got kids, or I can't get up and move, or I can't, you know, but maybe you can, but the part that's rational is maybe thinking through the details of how you would do it, not if you would do it.
Right. Well, that's, I think, smarter. How would you do it? I did flip a coin, but I always flip it and do it three times and then just go with what it says. But then I'm like, okay, well, if it was making me too anxious, then I wouldn't do it. But I do like the flipping a coin.
Yeah. Yours is more chance.
I do at least two out of three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine is more somatic. I just like to see what my body does when it lands on the wrong side. Right. Or if it lands on the right side and I'm like, yes, and I'm jumping up and down, then I know that that's probably what I should be doing.
Smart.
Yeah.
See, that's smart.
Trust your own self to figure out.
Yes.
But it's also good too. I think another thing that's actually helpful in the process for making an important decision is asking other people what you might be missing. You know, because I think being able to understand kind of where our, what I'm calling closed windows are, right? Like where we don't see certain things. Like someone says, if you do quit your job and you don't have something for a while, don't forget that ... did you remember that you won't have any contributions to your retirement fund or something? And you're like, oh, shoot. Or don't forget, you have the surgery coming up in 3 weeks and it's not going to be covered under insurance. Like someone might remind you or tell you of something that you hadn't really considered that may then make that not even an option. Like the decision is just off the table. But it's nice because sometimes we can't think of all of those things ourselves. So we can ask other people, not what they would do, but what am I missing? I think that's the bigger question. What am I missing when I'm looking at making this decision?
Right.
But instead we ask people, what would you do?
Mm.
Well, it's hard. What would they do? They're in a different context.
Right.
You say, what would you do if you were me? Okay.
They put
themselves in your shoes and they still don't know, but you can say, what am I missing while I'm making this important decision in my life?
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. I think that's, I'm thinking about that. What's this? I mean, that's the other thing is like, why are you asking anybody else anyway? Just because you want reassurance, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to watch out for naysayers always also, you know?
Right, right.
Like this 9-year-old said to me the other day, oh, the reason I'm not into football anymore is because this grandmother said, you know, you're too small. And I said, well, you don't have to listen to that. You know, you can work your butt off and then you have no idea. You don't know. Like there's all kinds of options, you know? So if that's something you want to do, then pursue it. If that's something you want to put your time and energy into, then do it. Like don't listen to those people. And then you have to be careful about who you share your dreams with or who you ask for advice. You know, I think that's a big problem for a lot of people. You know, they encounter naysayers and then it makes them feel lacking in confidence, you know?
Right. Right, exactly. Well, and that's the thing too, is like I've had friends that are more validators. Like no matter what I say that I'm going to do, they're just so on board and they support me and they don't point out any kind of potholes. But then I have other friends that are just devil's advocates to be devil's advocates. And and I just got exhausted from, frankly, both of them. I don't really care what you think.
Interesting.
I don't want your feedback.
That's because you're in the fucking 50s now. That's why you don't care.
But I don't
care. The other things, like, do you really care? I don't really care what anybody thinks about what I do.
No, but I do like the question though. What am I missing? I want someone to help me process for me to make that choice. I don't want their opinion about whether or not they would make that choice. I would love it if I exited that conversation after talking about what am I missing, not knowing at all what that other person thought I should do. That would be the ideal processing where they don't say what their opinion is, but they help you work through your opinion. So I do like that external processing, but I don't really care what you think about what I should.
Well, you gotta be really careful when you talk to people then about that, because they could get very offended. You know what I mean? Like the way that you say it, you gotta be careful about, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't care what
you think, but help me figure this out, right?
But you and I have talked about it before too. It's like, I'm not looking for a solution or opinion, but help me talk through this.
Yeah. And it's hard for some people to do that.
It is really hard because they just want to give you their opinion. And then if you don't follow along with what they want, what their opinion is, then they don't want to talk to you about it anymore. I had one ex who I would talk to about how much I was struggling at work with a supervisor that I had. And I didn't want to quit my job. I loved my job. And frankly, it was the only thing in my field in the state. And so if I left it, I'd have to move. It was a very specialized job. And I was hoping to wait this boss out until they left. So I would come home and I would talk to my partner at the time and say, like, I really want you to talk me through some options of things that I can do to help survive this situation or make it better. But the feedback I got was, quit your job. And it was like, I know that that's what you think I should do, but that to me is not what I want to do. So can you help talk me through what I can do to make the situation better without quitting? And it got to a point where we just couldn't talk about it anymore. Because she said, you're not taking my advice. I told you to quit this job and I can't talk to you about it anymore.
Yeah, it's hard for some people. Yeah. They're like, done, one and done, you know? I told you what I think, be done. I don't want to hear about it anymore. I mean, I get that, you know? It's hard. It's hard to process a lot with somebody else, you know?
Right, it is.
But it's hard to be that person that's sounding board and you're like, oh my God, I already told you.
I already told you what you should do. Yeah, exactly. When in reality, it's like, you know, if someone comes to me and, you know, there was a point in time when you had some struggles and you've come to me and I've tried to give you different thoughts. And finally, I just asked, what do you need from me? Because whatever I'm doing is not working. And you're like, I just need to tell you the same thing 100 times over until I'm done telling the story.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm not going to tell you what I think of it. I'm not going to tell you what you should do. I'm just going to sit here and listen while you tell your story. And you did. You told it like 100 times and then you were over it.
Yeah. And I know it's frustrating to be like, you know, telling somebody, right? Like, I just want to talk about this. I don't want your advice or whatever. It's very hard. It's hard for me to not give advice either, you know?
Yeah.
It's very hard. It can be frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, it is for me too, because I always think I know best. So,
well. I mean, it's hard, right? People come to you, like, people come to you for advice and then you're like, oh, you're not taking my advice. But maybe, you know, again, we had, I think it was Heather Brown who was on one of the podcasts. He said, like, ask the person, what do you need from me now? Are you ready to hear this? Or do you want me just to listen, you know? Or what are you needing from me?
Right, exactly. Exactly. And sometimes people just don't even want to hear anything. They don't even want to talk about it. And people give unsolicited advice. Like, you know, I wanted to talk to you and tell you what I think you should do about this situation. And that person didn't even bring it up. It's like, because that was her whole thing about the broccoli in the teeth. Would you want would you want to know if you had broccoli in your teeth? And some people just say, not right now.
Right.
Not right now.
Are you ready to receive what I have to say? You know?
Exactly. I mean, it's already hard enough to make a decision. It's already hard enough to assess risks. So, you know, it makes it really muddy when someone forces their opinion on you. But like I said, reaching out and asking someone to help you process and go through your own risk analysis and decision-making process, as long as they can do that, you can find a trusted person who either is really good at it or someone who is so distanced from your decision that they don't really care. That can help too, can help you process. But if you find that the processing becomes so much of someone else telling you what to do, then that's maybe not healthy, because then you're going to have a biased opinion of what you need to do to move forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, again, if this is about self-work, then you need to like figure out who's going to be helpful to me and who's not, and just go to those people and forget everybody else, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And then figure out the process that makes you feel the most settled when making these risky decisions, right? Some people, it is a pro and con list. Some people like me, it's flipping a coin and getting a somatic response. For you, it's flipping a coin and just going with what it says. You know, some people, you know, like right, we talked about this idea of double clarity, right? The clarity in the decision and the clarity after the decision, that might help people. So there's lots of different ways that you can go about it, but they're all personal. There's not one right way of doing it. It's just assessing those risks and being able to say, here's a decision I feel good about. And it also, some people might just say, I want straight up advice from someone. Maybe that is something. Right. I don't particularly want unsolicited advice, but some people might say, I have no idea what to do in this situation. What would you do?
Right.
That's a legitimate question. It's just that if you don't want to know or you don't want that advice, don't ask that question. That's
right. So, yeah, but you have to know that in yourself also, you know?
Yeah.
Because I do think that leads to a lot of like, difficulty between people is if you're the one talking about something, but you can't clarify what you want, it can become very frustrating for both parties, right?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Because that one party thinks that you're asking for advice, and then they give it, and then you bite their head off or something. And
right.
Like, I didn't want your advice. It's like being very clear. So, you know, it's also that goes back to something, you know, kind of entirely different that goes much further than this topic of this conversation, is just setting your intentions. If you want to have a conversation with someone that's kind of going to be, that could be misunderstood or misread, is that my intention here is this, you know, and then make sure you're both on the same page.
Yeah.
I think that can help.
I believe it can.
Yes. So let me end with this question. Is there any kind of a risk, physical, emotional, financial, professional, or otherwise, that you're considering right now in your life?
Oh, probably just, I mean, I've been talking about this every episode, but whether I'm going to put the effort into my business or not. And I talked to two friends yesterday, one a realtor who obviously realtors have to drum up their own business. It's not consistent. It's not a job with a paycheck, you know? And so that was a really good conversation. And she had a lot of things to say. And I've done some legal stuff for her. And she asked me if I would do that, you know, for other people, and that she would really, you know, help me out and refer people to me. So I was like, okay, this is what I just need to get back out and do again is, you know, do networking, right? And listening to people. And then another friend called while I was on the phone with her. And so I hadn't talked to that friend for a while, and she was wondering what I was up to. And I talked to her about my job stuff, and, you know, she thought it was all very good. Like, my ideas and everything like that are super good. So, you know, having those conversations was helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm on the right track. I know I'm on the right track. So can I commit, right? Mm-hmm. And you've been, I mean, I said this last night when I was talking about it in my house, like, you've always been encouraging me and offering to help me. So why don't I just accept that? I don't know.
I know.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why I can't.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I know that I want to go forward with my own business. I know I want to be my own employer. I know that I need a lot of flexibility to have the kind of life that I want to have, right? And I want to make good money. And I've tried working for other people before. I've tried working for government. I've tried doing all that, and I end up leaving, you know? Maybe I'll leave myself. I don't know. You know, maybe I'll leave myself too. But myself can give me a lot more. If I can just figure out like the logistics part, I think I'd be a lot happier. So I need a tech person to help me, and you've offered. So let's see. Let's see by next season if I've accomplished anything or if I'm just saying all the same stuff.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, you've narrowed it down to the fact that you need some logistical help. I've offered to help you. I know there's other people that would offer to help you. So we'll see if you're not willing to take our help, then there's something else behind it.
Right. Shadow work. Do you remember in Unstuck? I don't even remember what job I was. I don't even remember that season that we did, and it was all about my work stuff.
Yeah, you but were I think at your previous firm, but you were litigating. You're trying to get.
Oh, okay, so I transitioned from litigation to non-litigation. So now I'm transitioning from being an employee to being self-employed and having the confidence. I mean, really, to say I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can do this, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So what are you doing that's risky?
Well, I started.
Don't view your life as risky.
I'm in the middle of something very risky. The release of my memoir, I put it up on social media for the first time the other day. So, you know, people have known about it because I've loosely referred to it in the podcast, but until the other day, I didn't name what it was. It's not out yet. Of course, people around me know about the book, but I hadn't told like the masses, and I put it out on social media for all to see. And it's muddy and it's messy and it's scary and it's really vulnerable. And it's a huge risk. Are people, you know, as a professional speaker, as an educator, putting things out there that private for my students to see, for potential people who are going to hire me to speak could see? It's really risky. But for me, I feel good about it. I don't regret it. There's nothing holding me back from it, but it's still very, very scary, a very scary risk for me, both personally and professionally, to be so exposed.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Because I see it like, again, so differently from the outside, because I'm like, here you are promoting your book and you're just like, what? Let's go. Like, I mean, and you put a lot of time and money and effort into it, you know? So to me, it's like, oh, you're one ball of confidence. I mean, it doesn't seem like you care. Nobody's going to get in your way. I mean, surprised to hear that information that that you at all have like, oh, whoops, I don't know about this. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, you're going to feel the way you're going to feel, but it's like, wow, like you did something that is super cool. And then like, who gives a shit what anybody thinks, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the bigger part of me is very confident, right? Mm-hmm. I feel really good about it. But there's a small part of me that's like, this is still risky.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
that somebody might come up and say, I mean, that's the other thing is that you're going to have to decide what you let in. Because I can't imagine that people would be like, oh, you're going to have her as a speaker. She wrote this memoir.
I would, you know? I would hope not. But, you know, it's interesting having been an author before and books that aren't nearly as personal. I've had bad reviews on Amazon. And so now I just don't read any of that stuff. But, the phenomenon that happened was really interesting is when we started the podcast, you and I would get messages. I would get messages through Facebook from people like strangers, basically telling me how much they enjoyed the podcast. But they came off like very familiar as if we were friends. I had no idea who these people were, but they knew all about my life because I'm on the podcast. So just kind of living in that public sphere where people know a lot more about me than I know about them. I don't know anything about the readers, but they'll know a lot about me. And so there's a risk in that too, right? This like... just kind of a dynamic that's out there. So it's risky.
Yeah, so you've already probably taken even bigger risks or similar risks, you know?
And it's with the podcast. With the podcast was similar. Yeah. Yeah. And it's worked out. I mean, this is going to work out too, or I wouldn't do it, but it is kind of scary, you know, it's putting my personal life out there. I mean, every review that I've gotten back has been great, but they've all said the same thing. Like, wow, this is so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yes, it is. It's like real. And it's, you see,
that's what you wanted, right?
I mean,
that's what you were going for.
I mean, I did.
That's the thing. Yeah. I think if you look at, and she gets a lot of hatred as well as like a lot of people like her, and she's very polarizing is, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert and her latest book, Meet Me at the River, or Take Me All the Way River, whatever it is, I think.
Yeah,
Meet Me at the River.
All the Way to the River.
All the Way to the River. Like, she is so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I mean, so vulnerable.
I mean, she is. But I love that
for her.
And I've connected with her. But yeah, you're right. She's gotten a lot of pushback. And so,
yeah.
But she said, it's worth it. Like for me, in my mind, it's worth helping people with my book by saying, like, you're not alone. Like, even if you're not going through heartbreak now, the fact that you might have gone through it at some point is, or you know someone who has, you can relate. You can have a sense of empathy.
Right.
And you just feel not so isolated that other people are doing this too. They're laying on the floor and they're crying and they're doing all these things. And so I wanted to put it out there because I knew that it was important for other people And it was important for me, but
right.
It's still scary. But
yeah.
Yeah. Well,
you have pretty much talked about most of it on the podcast. So I think you think of it that way. Like now you just come, you put it in written form and you picked a, you know, a cover art. Right. And now what's so interesting to me about it and me being, you know, mentioned in this book many times is like, you know, it's the same with a podcast. I have never gone back and listened to one podcast, nor will I ever. And like, I feel like I've said it, it's out there, it's done. And I feel like that's the case with, you know, what you've written about in your book. It's like, yeah. Okay, we lived it. It's done.
It's done. It's out there.
So for me, it's a very interesting experience to be part of.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you're going to have to keep talking about it and talking about it.
Exactly.
Like, I always think of that, like with musicians, you know, like in these famous bands that are performing 30 years later, the same song. So what do they think? Do they love it? Do they love the song so much? And, you know, people buy the tickets to go hear the same song they listened to on an album over and over and over and over for decades.
Yep.
I mean, look at some of those bands that have been around since the 70s, you know,
yep.
Still performing, still doing the same songs. And so people are going. And so, you know, that's the thing. I think for me, I listened to a lot of naysayers growing up. Like that's embedded in me. Like mm-hmm. That's my problem. That's my shadow work. And I know that. But, you know, having raised two kids before or participated in that, and now I'm doing it again for a second time with three kids. It's like my lesson or my thing to them is don't listen to those people.
Right. Right.
You know, don't.
Well, I'm not going to get on Amazon. I can tell you that, not read those reviews, but
yeah, well, if that's how you have to do it, I mean, right. Who cares?
I mean, you have to protect yourself a little bit because I can say who cares, but they do add up and they are hard.
Yeah, but again, it's like, remember, most people who have something positive to say aren't saying anything. And that's also in all of our lives. People don't come up and say, hey, I think you're doing an awesome job at being a parent. Or, hey, I think you're doing, unless you have you initiate a conversation with them about it, or you're out to coffee with your friends and you're discussing parenting or whatever. Most people don't walk up and say, I think you're doing a great job, you know,
right.
Or they only criticize you when something happens. And so who are these people writing stuff anyway? And that's what, if you listen to celebrities, I mean, there's a whole hilarious thing of celebrities reading the things about them out loud. I mean, it is ridiculous. It's like watching people screaming at football players on the screen during a game. And it's like, get yourself on the field.
Yeah.
Why don't you get yourself out there screaming at basketball players, whatever exactly. It is. Like, could you do any better? Then why don't you shut up? Why don't you just cheer when they do well and otherwise shut your mouth? Like, because who are you? Who are these people who are getting online to criticize other people? Okay, fine. If it's your job and you're a literary critic, but I'm telling you, look back in the history of the world. How did Ernest Hemingway, why do we say, okay, Ernest Hemingway's work is better than, you know, maybe a Black woman who wrote a great novel, but at the time, nobody was going to give her a break. Nobody was going to help her. Nobody was going to like care about her, what she had to say. That's where I do feel like the internet has equalized it for so many people in our world. Like mm-hmm. I can get on TikTok and watch hilarious people who weren't given the chance or weren't able to go around and do comedy shows, you know, hither and thither in a little dive bar, but they're funny, you know? And so
right,
it's like,
right.
They can do this from the comfort of their home. Now people want to hear these different voices. I want to hear what a Black woman has to say, but nobody did and nobody would publish it 50 years ago. So naysayers should just keep, if you don't have anything nice to say, then just move
don't
on.
Don't say anything at all, right?
Isn't just it? Move yes. on. Like you don't yeah. need to get on to criticize other people. If you
exactly.
don't like it, just shut up.
All right. We, yes, I agree with you.
Know?
And, yes. And so I think that's an important thing to remember when we're taking risks and things is just to really not give a lot of credence to these naysayers or don't seek out the stuff. Like for me, don't get
yeah.
on Amazon where that stuff is going to be prevalent. But yeah. What a great conversation we've had today. My gosh, all about risk taking and ways to consider it and all of this stuff. And certainly all of this idea about naysaying, I think it's really important to consider. But, thank you all for tuning in for season 12. What a great season we've had and a lot of really great discussions. Stay tuned for an upcoming season. I'm sure there will be one out in the coming months. But for now, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.